Carla, could you read the next two items? We're only taking a vote on one, but if you could read them together, and then I'll turn it over to Commissioner Saltzman.
467, revised city code language regarding council subpoena powers. And 468, authorized city attorney to exercise city authority to subpoena books, documents, and other records to determine scope of private-for-hire legislation to protect the public health, safety, and welfare within the incorporated boundaries of the City of Portland.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. What we have before us is a change to an ordinance, which is an emergency, and also then a resolution to issue a subpoena for documents from Uber. And I'll sort of paint the roadmap, and then I'll turn it over to the attorneys to fill in the details. This March, the New York Times published an investigation of Uber's use of Grayball, a sophisticated software tool used to evade government officials and their attempts to enforce consumer and safety protections. As part of its investigation, the New York Times cited the experience of Portland regulators who, when Uber illegally entered the Portland market in December of 2014, tried to book Uber rides but found those rides being canceled. At the time, Portland officials suspected that there was an effort on Uber's part to avoid regulators, but it was not until the New York Times investigation that we understood how sophisticated and widespread Uber's evasion truly was. Immediately following the disclosure of the Grayball tool, as outlined in the New York Times article, I directed the Portland Bureau of Transportation to conduct an investigation into the use of Grayball in the city of Portland and to determine if there were any signs that a similar tactic is still used by Uber to avoid regulation. The Portland Bureau of Transportation worked closely with my staff over the 45-day period to conduct an investigative audit to look in depth at the 2,300 compliance and field audits, commonly known as inspections, conducted by regulatory enforcement specialists. And we also requested ride data provided by the transportation network companies, both Uber and Lyft, and posed 8 specific information requests that were outlined in a letter addressed to Uber's CEO, Travis Kalanick, sent for myself and Mayor Wheeler on March 15th, 2017. I want to take this opportunity to thank the Portland Bureau of Transportation, specifically Leah Treat, Chris Warner, Mark Williams, Dave Benson, our city attorney Ken McGare, and their staffs for their tireless work during this time and for this effort that went into producing the detailed report. While the Portland Bureau of Transportation report didn't find any indication that Grayball is still used by Uber in the city of Portland, they have recommended some programmatic and code changes that will strengthen our role and efficacy as a regulatory body. And we will be bringing forward some code changes in light of that, what we have learned and what we will learn, we believe, from the subpoena at a later date.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. As part of our investigation, we called on Uber to supply us with the data and other critical information that would help us to fully assess their activities here in Portland and the extent of their attempt to evade our efforts to protect the public. Unfortunately, Uber has not complied with our request, and that is why I feel very strongly that the City Council must use one of the most powerful tools at our disposal, our legislative subpoena power, in order to obtain the requested records Uber has yet to provide, namely the Grayball playbook and its associated software. After we authorize the city attorney to issue the subpoena, it is my hope that I will have the support of council, as I said earlier, to come back in the coming months with a slate of code revisions that will be informed by both what comes of this process and the recommendations I've received from the Private for Hire Advisory Committee and also the Bureau of Transportation. I support ride sharing in Portland and believe that it provides many benefits to our community. We as a council fully support expanding transportation options for Portlanders. However, as a regulatory body charged with ensuring the safety of the public, we must also ensure everyone in the industry is playing by the rules, providing universal service, and acting ethically. So I want to thank my colleagues for joining me in signing on to this resolution we'll consider, for co-sponsoring it. It sends a strong message that we collectively stand firm in our right to subpoena these documents that will inform our legislative and regulatory processes. It is my hope that the City of Portland and Uber can have a mutually beneficial partnership going forward. And in order for that to happen, I believe this is a necessary and right thing to do on behalf of all Portlanders. And now I'd like to turn it over to, I think, Ben Walters and Tracy Reeve, who are going to talk about the ordinance and the resolution a little bit more.
So I'm your City Attorney, Tracy Reeve, and with me is Chief Deputy City Attorney Ben Walters. Ben is going to briefly address the ordinance, which contains some code changes, and then I'll briefly address the legislative subpoena.
Mayor, Commissioners, I'm Ben Walters with the City Attorney's Office. So the power to conduct investigation...
Ben, is that mic on?
The power to conduct investigations is inherent in the legislative process. This power encompasses inquiries concerning the administration of existing laws as well as proposed or possibly needed legislation. The authority vested in the council is both explicit in the charter, various provisions, and inherent in the council's legislative powers. There's existing code language addressing that subpoena authority. I was around the last time the council did this, back when they were asking for records from PGE, and Tracy assisted in that capacity when that subpoena was challenged by PGE in Multnomah County Circuit Court. In looking back upon that experience, we looked at the code and came up with some modifications to avoid some of the complicating issues that were experienced in that last go-around and to provide some clarification in the process going forward so that both the city and any entities that might be the recipient of a subpoena will have a clearer understanding of how to move forward once the subpoena is issued. So if there's any questions regarding the code amendments, I'm here and available to answer those questions.
I just have one question. Could you clarify any potential risks between our decision to investigate independently, which I strongly support, and the federal criminal investigation just announced? Is there any potential overlap, and are we at any risk of potentially interfering with that process at the federal level?
Mayor, if the response that we receive is relies upon Fifth Amendment protections in order to deny the request for production, or at this point, all the subpoena is for the production of records. And ordinarily in a corporate setting, and I'm advised of this by lawyers in our office who are more familiar with these issues, corporations at this point in time, the courts do not recognize that corporations have self-incrimination protection. And so we'd have to undertake an evaluation of that. But we are cooperating with the U.S. Attorney's Office in California, and we would probably confer with them. We don't want to jeopardize any of that process.
Very good. Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. Commissioner Fish?
I'm going to support this, and I thank Dan Saltzman for his leadership in bringing this forward. Dan, there were some additional findings in the PBOT report that I wanted just to flag. And when I, back in time, cast a no vote in terms of allowing Uber and Lyft and others to operate in Portland, one of the concerns I had was about trust. One of the concerns that another of my colleagues, Commissioner Fritz, had was about consumer protection and adequacy of insurance protections. And in this very thoughtful report that PBOT under Dan's leadership has issued, it appears to me that fully a quarter of the operators who were subject to random checks could not produce a valid insurance certificate. And that is very alarming. And I wonder, Dan or counsel, if you could comment about that and what additional steps we're going to do to ensure that the what I believe are already inadequate insurance standards are followed. And if someone can't produce a company insurance certificate, then it raises the question about whether the operator of that vehicle is under the misunderstanding that they can use their personal car insurance rather than commercial insurance, which again puts the consumer at undue risk. Could we get a follow-up on that?
Yeah, Mark Williams from the Portland Bureau of Transportation, who is in charge of our regulatory program here. And
I'm not sure if this is on. Okay,
yeah, it's on.
Thank you. So Mark Williams, I'm Regulatory Division Manager. The insurance during the field audits, the drivers aren't carrying a copy of the TNC insurance, but the TNCs are covered.
Well, then, but it is it according to Figure 1.7 on page 12 of the report, it says non-compliant, and then underneath says company insurance. So. PBOT has determined that these drivers are non-compliant. So in what way are they non-compliant concerning insurance?
They're just not carrying a paper copy of the insurance. So it's a problem that we've had with many of the TNC drivers in the past. We first required them to carry a digital copy. When we updated the code back in 2016, the requirement was to carry a non-digital copy, so just a paper copy of the insurance. So when they don't have that, we do record them as being and are non-compliant.
So they have the insurance. They may not have the paperwork.
They just don't have the paper copy.
And they have the insurance because the TNCs have represented by some agreement, agreed to provide umbrella insurance for all the drivers?
Correct. So Uber and Lyft provide coverage in all three periods for all the TNC drivers, and the TNC periods, the type of coverage varies, obviously, between period one and two and three.
But how do we know, sir, that a driver is not submitting a claim to their personal insurance as opposed to through the Uber corporate umbrella coverage?
Well, that is the reason for them being required to carry the paper copy.
So that's the point I wanted to get at.
Yes.
And since we cannot, so this has the effect of not only being a violation of our rules, but it also at least opens the door to people seeking to evade using the corporate umbrella insurance and using their private insurance, which would in turn make it more difficult for you to track accidents and claims, correct?
Well, possibly. So it would be, I would consider an enormous disadvantage to a TNC driver to present their own personal insurance in the event of an accident. That insurance is in place mostly to protect the consumer or in the event that the driver is liable for the accident. What we don't want to happen is if a TNC driver hits you in your car, we don't want him to present his or her personal insurance. Eventually, what happens is that the insurance companies eventually figure out this was a accident that was caused while they were operating on the platform, and Uber and Lyft's insurance will eventually kick in, but it does delay the process. So rather than a claim being settled in 45 days or less, it could be as far out as 6 months. So it's really important that if they have an accident, that they present the appropriate insurance so that the claim processors can head down the appropriate route initially.
And finally, Mr. Williams, what's the fine for not carrying a company insurance certificate?
Currently, the fine is $50. If you don't have, that's the first initial offense, and it goes up from there. I believe it goes from $50 to about $150.
Do you think that's adequate?
We are making recommendations to present to counsel at a later time to increase that minimum fine from $50 to $250.
Thank you.
Okay. Tracy, please. Yeah.
So I just wanted to address that the legislative subpoena power is not a new, you're not granting a new authority here. This is a long-established authority that legislative bodies have has been mentioned and was used previously in the PGE situation. But as Ben mentioned, what we did not have is a process in place that specifically set forth the rules, if you will, for how that works. And so in order of clarity for everyone, we're setting that forth. But the legislative subpoena authority is a long-established authority that you have that is inherent in the nature of a legislative body so that you have the ability to investigate and determine whether legislative changes, new legislation is appropriate. And so the legislative subpoena that you would be authorizing us to issue in the resolution is directed at getting the information from Uber that we haven't previously gotten the Grayball playbook, software, other information about how they've been using this technology, because we don't have any facts, and I don't mean to suggest that at this point there are any facts to suggest that this is being used for other purposes, but it's certainly, depending on the nature of the technology, it is of concern. Could it be used for other improper purposes? And is that something that council might want to address? Which is why we're more broadly wanting to get the playbook and evaluate how this technology works, what other areas it could be used in, and is specific legislation appropriate that would avoid that occurring?
So it's to inform our legislative and regulatory efforts.
Exactly.
Private for hire transportation.
Right. Exactly.
Tracy, one other question, because I think there's some confusion in the public. Today, we're being asked to authorize the issuance of a legislative subpoena, but we are also going to come back to council in a couple weeks with an ordinance or a resolution to authorize administrative subpoenas so that the Department of Revenue can collect data from companies that are not currently complying with our laws in the sharing economy other than Uber. What's the distinction?
Well, an administrative subpoena is in aid of enforcing a legislative scheme that is already in place. So council has a legislative scheme in place for taxing and regulating short-term rentals. And that will give us explicit subpoena authority to get the information we need to apply that regulatory code. So it's not looking at what information do we need for you all to be able to make informed legislative judgments. It's directed at allowing the regulators to implement the legislative program that you've already adopted, and with any changes that you make to implement that short-term rental regulatory scheme.
Thank you.
Thank you all. I don't know if there's any testimony.
Is there any public testimony?
I believe one person has left, Charles Bridge Crane Johnson.
Very good. Come on up.
Did Uber send a letter?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Yes. Okay. So I want to thank Commissioner Fish for going in there with the administrative subpoenas, because when we talk about fairness, we want to make sure that all of the new falsely labeled sharing economy companies can be concerned that the public will know what they're really doing. I only wish that the administrative subpoena process could have been sped up so that Airbnb or similar situated companies would know that we want to really know how involved they are in deceiving people about the effect they're having on our housing market, the fact that we live in a city where thousands of people are sleeping outdoors and on the streets. To the specifics of Grayball and Uber, it was interesting to hear that corporate personhood doesn't extend perhaps to the Fifth Amendment. So I appreciate your zeal here, which is really where the city needs to put its zeal. Earlier today, on item 455, we heard from an individual, a person who was screwed over by this community to the tune of having to pay a $250,000 bond to get out of jail for a situation that within months the district attorney said, no case, dismissed. So one of the things that a municipal corporation needs to do is be governed by real people who put real people first, so that we don't have situations where actual real human beings are abducted by armed thugs out of Starbucks, framed with $250,000 extortion, that then disappears through the legal process when cooler heads realize that a bunch of armed thugs in the police department exaggerated the situation. So please save your zeal for situations like that for Uber, Airbnb, billionaires hiding down in San Francisco, undermining the quality of life while telling everybody they're running something they falsely label as sharing economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog X. The city of Portland has found no evidence that Uber has used Grayball or any technology to avoid city inspectors. Again, I think what the city is doing right now is just a witch hunt. You're positioning yourself based upon the DOJ investigation to negotiate a settlement agreement, them not admitting any guilt. They're not going to supply you any records. It's not going to happen. The program was designed as a safety program, basically to make sure that their drivers aren't harmed. They're going to prove that. And again, you're just positioning yourself in a way to try to get money from them. And as you know, Uber's getting ready to do an IPO, whether it's in the next year or so. This is going to affect their value on that. I hope Travis Kalanick will come back and sue the city, maybe for $1 billion, just to let you know, you don't have anything here. It's a witch hunt. You're going after Travis Kalanick. And you know what's interesting here is that you allowed Uber to come in and Lyft into this city and create an app in their platform that has decimated the local cab companies that have been here for years. And now you're surprised that Uber is creating software that you're claiming is monitoring you at the same time and your regulators. Well, again, don't be surprised. At the end of this, you'll find out that everything they're doing is legal. Everything it's doing will proceed forward. And again, he'll get the highest value for his IPO when he rolls out Uber. And again, he can thank you for that. He can thank you for that. And I noticed on this resolution, all of the commissioners submitted this resolution and pushed it forward. Well, isn't that great to the taxi cab companies in this city that have lost everything? You're hypocritical. You'll get nothing from Uber, and they'll win at the end of the day. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all who signed up.
Oh, very good. Any further council discussion?
Mayor, just since Lightning is someone who testifies a lot and often makes cogent and thoughtful comments, just want to correct the record on one thing he said. In the investigative report that Commissioner Salzman brought forward to the council, Uber acknowledged they used the technology to evade and deceive regulators. That's an admission, and that's in a letter from their attorney. So it's not a claim or an unfounded claim. They have acknowledged, but they've also stated that they have discontinued using it. And one of the things we're going to do is verify whether that's accurate. But I want to clarify that. They did acknowledge it using the technology.
So item 468 is a first reading, and so I will...
It's an emergency.
It's an emergency.
468 is not.
Resolution.
I'm talking about 468. 468 is a non-emergency first reading.
It's a resolution. So we're going to vote on both.
Oh, you're right. I stand corrected. If only I could learn to read. So let's take them in order then. 467, please call the roll.
Fish?
I am very proud to support this ordinance today, and I want to begin by thanking the Transportation Commissioner for the aggressive way that he has pursued the truth in this case. I reread the report the other night that Dan and his department issued, and I think it's a model of an investigative report, so I compliment the commissioner, the director, and the legal team that worked on it. I was mildly surprised once the report issued that Uber chose to once again revert to its combative nature rather than to seek a conciliatory attitude. And I was struck when I was contacted by a reporter who asked me to respond to a statement that Uber issued, did not have the courtesy of sharing it with the council, but issued, and it has the following sentence. It is unfortunate this investigation and the report have become so politically charged, and that Commissioner Fish has used the process to make baseless claims about our conduct in Portland. So first of all, let me say that I consider it an insult to suggest that Commissioner Saltzman at any stage of this proceeding has been politically motivated. And I would challenge Uber to come forward with one shred of evidence to support that claim. And to attack the integrity of this body and the commissioner as a way of deflecting attention away from their acknowledged misconduct is the kind of behavior we take for granted in Washington, D.C., but is somewhat new to Portland, Oregon. The second thing I want to say is, since the person who issued this statement also chose to make an attack on me personally, Mayor, point of personal privilege, I want to just review what's in the record, because we don't want there to be any suggestion that the council is making claims that are not supported by the facts. And these are the claims that have been made at various points in this proceeding. The first is that when Uber entered the marketplace, they operated illegally. We have made that claim, and we believe our law supports that. In fact, the city of Portland brought a lawsuit to compel Uber to cease their illegal operations. Number two, Uber has now acknowledged through an attorney submission that they used a technology called Grayball to evade and deceive regulators. If the statute of limitations on fraud had not run, I believe we would have a number of legal claims we could bring around that, but they have acknowledged they used a software to identify particular passengers and to bypass them so they could not, those passengers being city regulators, could not enforce the law. That has now been documented. It is also a fact that after the city, in a split vote, welcomed Uber into town and set up a regulatory scheme, Uber subsequently went to Salem to seek to preempt the city from having any further role in regulating them as a TNC. And in their effort in Salem and the bill that they sponsored, they also proposed weakening consumer protections, preempting the city from enforcing its code, including protecting consumers. And in an interesting piece of what I would call regulatory overkill, seek to have forever the status of the drivers declared as a matter of law independent contractors. Fortunately, that legislation faced significant opposition, and including the city that opposed it, and Commissioner Saltzman testified against it. All of the statements I've just made are factually supported claims based on evidence in the record. And so I'm puzzled when Uber, through its paid professionals, makes claims about a politicized process or unfounded claims. I'm not even going to address the conduct that has been alleged outside of Portland around what I think can only be described as a sick corporate culture. A corporate culture that has led to Uber as a company bringing in an outside law firm to do a complete review of their compliance with Title VII. A corporate culture that has resulted in bombshell allegations about the treatment of women in the workplace. And, as has been noted in the report issued by PBOT, a corporate culture that has prompted the Department of Justice to begin a criminal inquiry. And they do not undertake such things lightly. So, those are all claims that have been made. They are all factually supported. And I think some offense that the response by this company at the point in which a report was issued is to challenge the integrity of this body. I believe it is time that we authorized the subpoena. I think we have an obligation as a legislative body to follow the evidence wherever it takes us. And I frankly do not trust this company to make representations to legal counsel. We have a right to see the underlying documents around Grayball, and we have a right to make our own independent inquiry as to whether the company has engaged in illegal conduct. Dan, thank you for your strong leadership on this. This is a vote I am very proud to make. And in conclusion, because I get this sometimes from our critics, I happen to proudly carry the app of a company called Lyft on my phone. And it was placed there by someone in my office who said I should have it during inclement weather to have another option. I am not against companies that provide these services. I do have concerns about the documented behavior of one company called Uber. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank my colleagues for what I anticipate will be their support for these two items. This is about getting at the facts and ensuring that our public is being served in a safe and sound manner, and that we, our regulators, have the ability to do their job to protect the public safety and to ensure that all riders in Portland have universal access to these services and are not being somehow discriminated by income level or zip code or any other sophisticated means that may be encompassed in the gray ball technology. And that's why I feel we are compelled to seek the subpoena, to see this information, to assure that we can do our job and we can protect our public. And so I thank my colleagues, and I also really wanted to thank people at PBOT and our city attorney's office earlier. I also want to thank Tia Williams in my office for doing an outstanding job in organizing and helping to make sure this investigation was done in a timely manner and that we're at the point where we're at today. So thank you, Tia, for your work as well. Aye.
You Daly?
I'm pleased to support this ordinance. I think I've had ongoing concerns about Uber and other sharing economy platforms rolling into town, flouting local laws, and seeing how far they can, what they could get away with, and how far they can push local governments. And I think it's time for us to show them how far they can push. I think it's, I'm also puzzled when people come to give testimony in front of this body and blame us for the actions of past councils. We have two people sitting here that voted against the Uber ordinance and two people that weren't on council. And I guess I just have to get used to being part of an entity that gets part of that phenomenon, although I resent it. And I think it's meaningful that Commissioner Saltzman is the one to bring this forward, because he's supported Uber in the past and is now doing his job to protect the public. Aye.
Fritz.
An interesting conversation last week with Tom Chamberlain of the Oregon AFL-CIO. And he is working with some of the, and I agree with Mr. Johnson, sharing economy is not at all descriptive of what these companies do. He's working with some of the drivers who, having been lured into working for Uber and Lyft, especially Uber, then suddenly found that Uber slashed prices, which meant that they had to work even longer hours in order to make a decent living, and in fact many of them do work full-time for it with no benefits and no much less ability to affect their own future than if they worked for a traditional taxi cab company. So I found that interesting. Obviously, it's a group of employees who don't even get the respect of being called employees who are reaching out to unions saying, how can we push back against this giant who's in our country, so and in our city indeed. So I appreciate that assistance, and thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for your leadership on this. Aye.
Wheeler.
I'd like to add my thanks. Commissioner Saltzman and his team, I think, did an exemplary effort of putting together the framework for this conversation and the framework for an investigation. I want to thank those at the staff level in the bureaus who worked very hard to provide us with factual and accurate information. And I want to reflect that going into this subpoena situation should always be a last resort for us. But as regulators, this is a tool that we need to be able to ensure that we're doing our jobs. And Commissioner Fish did a great job of laying out the facts. The reason we are doing this is we need access to documents that we believe are there that support what is already on the factual record in terms of an effort to circumvent local regulators and local regulations. and therefore we need access to this information. And this is the tool that we have at our disposal as a local city council to gain access to the information to which we're entitled. So it brings me and my colleagues no pleasure to have to do this, but this is what we have to do to get the information we need in order to be effective regulators of this market. So I strongly support the effort you brought forth, Commissioner Saltzman, and I join my colleagues in voting aye. So the ordinance is now adopted, and I will now call the vote on 468, which is the resolution. I don't know if people have anything else to add, but we need to vote for that separately. So if you could call the roll on 468, the resolution.
Fish?
Yeah, I'm going to vote aye on this, and it is, I think, the council's hope that within about 2 weeks we'll have a separate ordinance and companion resolution that comes to council that delegates to the Revenue Bureau the authority to issue administrative subpoenas and to make some additional proposed changes to code. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The resolution is adopted.